Pestilence. Written by Dan Abnett. Read by Toby Longworth. The archenemy infects this universe. If we do not pause to fight that infection here, within our own selves, what purpose is there in taking our fight to the stars? Apothecary Engain, from his treatise on Imperial Medicine. 1. It is my belief that memory is the finest faculty we as a species possess. Through the function of memory, we are able to gather, hone, and transmit all manner of knowledge for the benefit of mankind, and the endless glory of our God Emperor, may the Golden Throne endure forevermore. To forget a mistake is to be defeated a second time, so we are taught in the sermons of Thor. How many a great leader plan his campaign without memory of those battles won and lost before? How many his soldiers absorb his teaching and improve without that gift? How many the ecclesiarchy disseminate its message to the universal populace without that populace holding the teachings in memory? What are scholars, clerks, historians, or chroniclers but agencies of memory? And what is forgetfulness but the overthrow of memory, the ruination of precious knowledge, and an abhorrence? I have, in the service of His Exalted Majesty, the Emperor of Terra, waged war upon that abhorrence all my life. I strive to locate things forgotten and return them to the custody of memory. I am a scrabbler in dark places, an illuminator of shadows, a turner of long unturned pages, an asker of questions that have lapsed, forever hunting for answers that would otherwise have remained unvoiced. I am a recollector, prizing lost secrets from the taciturn universe and returning them to the safe fold of memory, where they might again improve our lot among the outflung stars. My particular discipline is that of materia medica, for human medicine was my original calling. Our understanding of our own vital mechanisms is vast and admirable, but we can never know too much about our own biology and how to protect, repair, and improve it. It is our burden as a species to exist in a galaxy riven by war, and where war goes, so flourish its handservants, injury, and disease. It may be said that as each war front advances, so medical knowledge advances too. And where armies fall back in defeat or are destroyed, so medical knowledge retreats or is forgotten. Such are the lapses I seek to redress. Upon that very purpose I came to Symbol Iota late in my 48th year, looking for Ebo. To provide context, let me say that this would be the 3rd year of the Geovingian campaign in the Obscura Segmentum, and about 9 sidereal months after the first outbreak of Ulran's pox among the guard legions stationed on Geovingia itself. Also known colloquially as Blood Froth, Ulran's pox was named after the first victim it took, a colour sergeant called Gustav Ulran of the 15th Mordian, if memory serves me, and I pride myself it does. As a student of Imperial history and Materia Medica too, you will have Ulran's pox in your memory. A canker of body and vitality, virulently contagious, it corrupts from within, thickening circulatory fluids and wasting marrow, while embellishing the victim's skin with foul cysts and buboes. The cycle between infection and death is at most 4 days. In the later stages, organs rupture, blood emulsifies and bubbles through the pores of the skin, and the victim becomes violently delusional. Some have even conjectured that by this phase, the soul itself has been corroded away. Death is inescapable in almost every case. It appeared without warning on Genovingia, and within a month the Medicae Regimentalis were recording 20 death notices a day. No drug or procedure could be found that began to even slow its effects. No origin for the infection could be located. Worst of all, despite increasingly vigorous programs of quarantine and cleansing, no method could be found to prevent wholesale contagion. No plague carriers or means of transmission were identifiable. As an individual man weakens and sickens, so the Imperial Guard forces as a whole began to fail and falter as their best were taken by the pestilence. Within 2 months, War Master Rheingold's staff were doubting the continued viability of the entire campaign. By the 3rd month, Ulran's pox had also broken out, apparently miraculously and spontaneously, given its unknown process of dispersal, on Genovingia Minor, Lorchis, and Adamanaxa Delta. Four separate centres of infection, right along the leading edge of the Imperial advance through the sector. At that point, the contagion had spread to the civilian population of Genovingia itself, and the administratum had issued a proclamation of pandemic. It was said the skies above the cities of that mighty world were black with carrion flies, and the stench of biological pollution permeated every last acre of the planet. I had a bureaucratic posting on Lorchis at that time, and became part of the emergency body charged with researching a solution. It was weary work. I personally spent over a week in the archive without seeing daylight, as I oversaw the systematic interrogation of that vast, dusty body of knowledge. It was my friend and colleague, Administra Medica Leonid Vammel, who first called our attention to Pyridae and the torment. It was an admirable piece of work on his part, a feat of study, cross-reference and memory. Vammel always had a good memory. Under the instruction of Senior Administrator Medica Junus Malta, we diverted over 60% of our staff to further research into the records of Pyridae, and requests were sent out to other Genovingian worlds to look to their own archives. Vammel and I compiled the accumulating data ourselves, increasingly certain we had shone a light into the right shadow and found a useful truth. Surviving records of the torment incident on Pyridae were painfully thin, though consistent. It was, after all, 34 years in the past. Survivors had been few, but we were able to trace 191 possibles who might yet be alive. They were scattered to the four cosmic winds. Reviewing our findings, Senior Malta authorized personal recollection, such was the gravity of the situation, and 40 of us, all with rank high administrator or better, were dispatched immediately. Vammel, rest his soul, was sent to Gandian Saturnalia, and was caught up in a local civil war, and thereafter killed. I do not know if he ever found the man he was looking for. Memory is unkind there. And I was sent to Symbol Iota. 2. Symbol Iota, where it is not covered in oceans that are the most profound mauve in colour, a consequence, so I understand, of algae growth, is a hot, verdant place. Rainforest islands ring the equatorial region in a wide belt. I made fall at Symbolopolis, a flat-topped volcanic outcrop, around whose slopes hive structures cluster like barnacles, and there, transferred to a trimaran, which conveyed me, over a period of 5 days, down the length of the local island group to St. Bastion. I cursed the slowness of the craft, though in truth it skated across the mauve seas at better than 30 knots, and, on several occasions, tried to procure an ornithopter, or air conveyance. But the Cymbali are a nautical breed who place no faith in air travel. It was torturous, and I was impatient. It had taken 10 days to cross the Imperium from Lorchis to Symbol Iota aboard a navy frigate. Now it took half that time again to cross a distance infinitesimally smaller. It was hot, and I spent my time below decks, reading data slates. The sun and sea wind of Symbol burned my skin, used as it was to years of lamp-lit libraries. I took to wearing a wide-brimmed straw hat above my administrator's robes whenever I ventured out on deck, a detail my servitor Calibane found relentlessly humorous. On the fifth morning, St. Bastion rose before us out of the violet waters, a pyramidal tower of volcanic flue, dressed in jungle greenery. Even as we crossed the inlet from the trimaran to the shore by electric launch, turquoise seabirds mobbing over our heads, I could see no discernible sign of habitation. The thick coat of forestation came right down to the shore, revealing only a thin line of white beach at its hem. The launch pulled into a cove where an ancient stone jetty jutted out from under the trees like an unfinished bridge. Calibane, his bionic limbs whirring, carried my luggage onto the jetty and then helped me over. I stood there, sweating in my robes, leaning against my staff of office, batting away the beetles that circled in the stifling humidity of the cove. There was no one there to greet me, though I had voxed word of my approach several times en route. I glanced back at the launch pilot, a dour Cymbali, but he seemed not to know anything. Calibane shambled down to the shore end of the jetty and called my attention to a copper bell, verdigreed by time and the oceans, that hung from a hook on the end of the pier. "Ring it," I told him, and he did, cautiously, wrapping his simian fingers against the metal dome. Then he glanced back at me, nervously, his optical implants clicking under his low brow ridge as they refocused. Two sisters of the Ecclesiarchy shortly appeared, their pure white robes as stiff and starched as the bicorn wimples they wore on their heads. They seemed to regard me with some amusement, and wordlessly ushered me to follow them. I fell in step behind them, and Caliban followed, carrying the luggage. We took a dirt path up through the jungle, which rose sharply and eventually became stepped. Sunlight flickered spears of light through the canopy above, and the steaming air was full of exotic birdsong and the fidget of insects. At a turn in the path, the hospice of St. Bastian Apostate suddenly stood before me. A great stone-built edifice typical of the early imperial naive, its ancient flying buttresses and lower walls were clogged with vines and creepers. I could discern a main building of 5 stories, an adjacent chapel, which looked the oldest part of the place, as well as outbuildings, kitchens, and a walled garden. Above the wrought-iron lich gate stood a weathered statue of our beloved god emperor smiting the arch-enemy. Inside the rusty gate, a well-tended path led through a trimmed lawn, punctured by tombstones and crypts. Stone angels and graven images of the Adeptus Astartes regarded me as I followed the sisters to the main door of the hospice. I noticed then, fleetingly, that the windows of the 2 uppermost stories were rigidly barred with iron grills. I left Caliban outside with my possessions and crossed the threshold behind the sisters. The main atrium of the hospice was a dark and deliciously cool oasis of marble, with limestone pillars that rose up into the dim spaces of the high vault. My eyes lighted on the most marvellous triptych at the altar end, beneath a stained glass oriole window, which I made observance to at once. In breadth it was wider than a man's spread arms, and showed 3 aspects of the saint. On the left, he roamed the wilderness in apostasy, renouncing the demons of the air and fire. On the right, he performed the miracle of the maimed souls. In the center panel, his martyred body, draped in blue cloth, the 9 bolter wounds clearly countable on his pallid flesh, he lay in the arms of a luminous and suitably mournful emperor. I looked up from my devotions to find the sisters gone. I could feel the subliminal chorus of a psychic choir mind-singing nearby. The cool air pulsed. A figure stood behind me, tall, sculptural, his starched robes as white as his smooth skin was black. He seemed to regard me with the same amusement that the sisters had shown. I realized I was still wearing my straw hat. I removed it quickly, dropping it onto a pew, and took out the pictslate of introduction Senior Malta had given me before I left Lorch's.
"I am Baptrice," he said, his voice low and genial. "Welcome to the Saint's Hospice."
"Higher Administrator Medica Lemuel Sark," I replied. "My dedicated function is as a recollector, posted lately to Lorch's. Genovingia General Group 4577 Decimal, as part of the Campaign Auxiliary Clerical Archive."
"Welcome, Lemuel," he said. "A recollector, indeed. We haven't had one of your breed here before."
I was uncertain quite what he meant, though in hindsight the detail of his misunderstanding still chills me. I said, "You were expecting me? I voxed messages ahead."
"We have no voxcaster here at the hospice,"
Baptrice replied.
"What is outside does not concern us. Our work is focused on what is inside. Inside this building, inside ourselves. But do not be alarmed. You are not intruding. We welcome all who come here. We do not need notice of an arrival."
I smiled politely at this enigmatic response and tapped my fingers on my staff. I had hoped they would be ready for me and had everything in place so that I could begin my work immediately. Once again, the leisurely pace of Symbol Iota was weighing me down. "I must, Brother Baptiste, proceed with all haste. I wish to begin my efforts at once." He nodded.
"Of course. Almost all who come to St. Bastian are eager to begin. Let me take you through and provide you with food and a place to bathe."
"I would rather just see Ebo, as soon as it's possible." He paused, as if mystified.
"Ebo?"
"Colonel Feig Ebo, late of the 23rd Landmark Lancers. Please tell me he is still here, that he is still alive.
He is,
Baptrice faltered, and looked over my picked slate properly for the first time. Some sort of realization crossed his noble face.
My apologies, Higher Sark. I misconstrued your purpose. I see now that you are an acting recollector, sent here on official business.
Of course, I snapped. What else would I be?
A supplicant, coming here to find solace. An inmate. Those that arrive on the jetty and sound the bell are always that. We get no visitors except those who come to us for help.
An inmate, I repeated.
Don't you know where you are? He asked. This is the hospice of St. Bastian, a refuge for the insane.
3. An asylum. Here was an inauspicious start to my mission. I had understood from my research that the hospice of St. Bastian was home to a holy order that offered sanctuary and comfort for those brave warriors of the Emperor's legions who were too gravely wounded or disabled by war to continue in service. I knew the place took in the damaged and the lost from war zones all across the sector, but I truly had no notion that the damage they specialized in was wounds to the psyche and sanity. It was a hospice for the deranged, individuals who presented themselves at its gates voluntarily in hope of redemption. Worst of all, Baptrice and the sisters had presumed me to be a supplicant. That damned straw hat had given me just the air of madness they were expecting. I was lucky not to have been unceremoniously strapped into a harness and placed in isolation. On reflection, I realize I should have known. Bastian, that hallowed saint, was a madman who found sanity in the love of the Emperor, and who later cured, through miracles, the mentally infirm. Baptrice pulled a bell cord, and novitiates appeared. Caliban was escorted inside with my luggage. We were left alone in the atrium as Baptrice went to make preparations. As we waited, a grizzled man with an old tangle of scar tissue where his left arm had been crossed the hall. He was naked save for a weathered, empty ammunition belt strung around his torso. He looked at us dimly, his head nodding slightly. Then he padded on his way and was lost from view. Somewhere, distantly, I could hear sobbing, and an urgent voice repeating something over and over again. Hunched at my side, his knuckles resting on the flagstones, Caliban glanced up at me anxiously, and I put a reassuring hand on his broad, hairy shoulder. Figures appeared around us, haggard, tonsured men in long black ecclesiarch vestments, and more phantom sisters in their ice-white robes and horned cowls. They grouped in the shadows on either side of the atrium and watched us silently. One of the men rehearsed silently from long ribbons of parchment that a boy-child played out for him from a studded casket. Another scribbled in a little chapbook with his quill. Another swung a brass censer around his feet, filling the air with dry, pungent incense. Baptrice reappeared.
"Brethren, be welcome to Higher Administrator Sark, who has come to us on official business. You will show him every courtesy and cooperation."
"What official business?"
asked the old priest with the chapbook, looking up with gimlet eyes. Magnifying half-moon lenses were built into his nasal bone, and rosary beads hung around his dew-lapped neck like a floral victory wreath. "A matter of recollection," I replied.
"Pertaining to what?" he pressed.
"Brother Jadon is our archivist, Higher Sark. You will forgive his persistence."
I nodded to Baptrice and smiled at the elderly Jardon, though no smile was returned. "I see we are kindred, Brother Jardon. Both of us devote ourselves to remembrance." He half shrugged. "I am here to interview one of your inmates. It may be that he holds within some facts that even now may save the lives of millions in the Genovingian group." Jardon closed his book and gazed at me, as if waiting for more. Senior Malta had charged me to say as little as I could of the pandemic, for news of such a calamity might spread unrest, but I felt I had to give them more. "Warmaster Rheingold is commanding a major military excursion through the Genovingian group. A sickness, which has been named Ulrun's Pox, is afflicting his garrisons. Study has shown it may bear comparison with a plague known as the Torment, which wasted Piridi some 3 decades past. One survivor of that epidemic resides here. If he can furnish me with any details of the incident, it may be productive in securing a cure."
"How bad is it back on Genovingia?"
asked another old priest. the one with the censer. It is contained, I lied. Jardone snorted.
Of course it is contained. That is why a higher administrator has come all this way. You ask the most foolish things, Brother Geroad.
Another man now spoke. He was older than all, crooked and half-blind, his wrinkled pate dotted with liver spots. A flared ear-trumpet clung to the robes of his left shoulder with delicate mechanical legs.
I am concerned that questioning and a changed routine may disturb the serenity of the hospice. I do not want our residents upset in any way.
Your comment is noted, Brother Nero, said Baptrice. I'm sure Hyasak will be discreet.
Of course, I assured them. It was late afternoon when Baptrice finally led me upstairs into the heart of the hospice. Caliban followed us, lugging a few boxed items from my luggage. Ghostly, Bicorn's sisters watched us from every arch and shadow. We proceeded from the stairs into a large chamber on the third floor. The air was close. Dozens of inmates lurked there, though none glanced at us. Some were clad in dingy, loose-fitting overalls, while others wore ancient fatigues and imperial guard dress. All rank pins, insignia, and patches had been removed, and no one had belts or bootlaces. Two were intently playing regicide on an old tin board by the window. Another sat on the bare floor planks, rolling dice. Others mumbled to themselves or gazed into the distance blankly. The naked man we had seen in the atrium was crouching in a corner, loading spent shell cases into his ammunition belt. Many of the residents had old war wounds and scars, unsightly and grotesque.
Are they safe?
I whispered to Baptrice.
We allow the most stable freedom to move and use this common area. Of course, their medication is carefully monitored. But all who come here are safe, as all who come here come voluntarily. Some, of course, come here to escape the episodes that have made regular life impractical.
None of this reassured me. On the far side of the chamber, we entered a long corridor, flanked by cell rooms. Some doors were shut, bolted from outside. Some had cage bars locked over them. All had sliding spy slits. There was a smell of disinfectant, an ordure. Someone, or something, was knocking quietly and repeatedly against one locked door we passed. From another we heard singing. Some doors were open. I saw two novitiates sponge-bathing an ancient man who was strapped to his metal cot with fabric restraints. The old man was weeping piteously. In another room, where the door was open but the outer cage locked in place, we saw a large, heavily muscled man sitting in a ladder-backed chair, gazing out through the bars. He was covered in tattoos, regimental emblems, mottos, kill scores. His eyes glowed with the most maniacal light. He had the tusks of some feral animal implanted in his lower jaw, so they hooked up over his upper lip. As we passed, he leapt up and tried to reach through the bars at us. His powerful arm flexed and clenched. He issued a soft growl.
"Behave, Ayok,"
Baptrice told him. The cell next door to Ayok's was our destination. The door was open, and a sister and a novitiate waited for us. The room beyond them was pitch black. Baptrice spoke for a moment with the novitiate and the sister. He turned to me.
"Ebo is reluctant, but the sister has convinced him it is right that he speaks with you. You may not go in. Please sit at the door."
The novitiate brought up a stool, and I sat in the doorway, throwing out my robes over my knees. Caliban dutifully opened my boxes and set up the transcribing artificer on its tripod stand. I gazed into the blackness of the room, trying to make out shapes. I could see nothing. "Why is it dark in there?"
"Ebo's malady, his mental condition, is exacerbated by light. He demands darkness,"
Baptrice shrugged. I nodded glumly and cleared my throat. "By the grace of the God Emperor of Terra, I come here on his holy work. I identify myself as Lemuel Sark, Higher Administrator Medica, assigned to Lorch's Administratum." I glanced over at the artificer. It chattered quietly and extruded the start of a parchment transcription tape that I hoped would soon be long and informative. "I seek Feig Ebo, once a colonel with the 23rd Lamech Lancers." Silence. "Colonel Ebo?" A voice, thin as a knife, cold as a corpse, whispered out of the dark room.
I am he. What is your business?
I leaned forwards. I wish to discuss Pyridy with you, the torment you endured.
I have nothing to say. I won't remember anything.
Come now, Colonel. I'm sure you will if you try.
You misunderstand. I didn't say I can't. I said I won't.
Deliberately.
Just so. I refuse to.
I wiped my mouth and realized I was dry-tongued. Why not, Colonel?
Pyridy is why I'm here. 34 years trying to forget. I don't want to start remembering now.
Baptiste looked at me with a slightly helpless gesture. He seemed to be suggesting that it was done, and I should give up. Men are dying on Genovingia from a plague we know as Ulrin's pox. This pestilence bears all the hallmarks of the torment. Anything you can tell me may help save lives.
I couldn't then. 59,000 men died on Pyridy. I couldn't save them then, though I tried with every shred of my being. Why should that be different now?
I gazed at the invisible source of the cold voice. I cannot say for sure, but I believe it is worth trying. There was a long pause. The artificer whirred on idle. Caliban coughed, and the machine recorded the sound with a little chatter of keys.
How many men?
I'm sorry, Colonel. What did you ask me?
How many men are dying?
I took a deep breath. When I left Lorchus, 900 were dead, and another 1,500 infected. On Genovingia Minor, 6,000 and twice that number ailing. On Adabanaxa Delta, 200. But it had barely begun there. On Genovingia itself, 2.5 million. I heard Baptiste gasp in shock. I trusted he would keep this to himself. Colonel? Nothing. Colonel, please. Cold and cutting, the voice came again, sharper than before.
Pyridy was a wasted place.
4.
Pyridy was a wasted place. We didn't want to go there. But the arch-enemy had taken the eastern continent and razed the hives, and the northern cities were imperiled. Warmaster Getus sent us in. 40,000 Lamarck lancers, virtually the full strength of the Lamarck regiments. 20,000 Fanshawe armor men and their machines, and a full squad of Adeptus Astartes. The Doom Eagles, shining grey and red. The place we were at was Pyridy Polar. It was God knows how old. Cyclopean towers and columns of green marble, hewn in antique times by hands I'm not convinced were human. There was a strangeness to the geometry. The angles never seemed quite right. It was as cold as a bastard. We had winter dress, thick white flak coats with fur hoods, but the ice got in the lasguns and dulled their charges, and the damned Fanshawe tanks were forever refusing to start. It was day, too. Day all the time. There was no night. It was the wrong season. We were so far north. The darkest it got was dusk, where one of the two suns set briefly, and the sky turned flesh pink. Then it would be daylight again. We'd been on and off for 2 months, mainly long-range artillery duels, pounding the ice drifts. No one could sleep because of the perpetual daylight. I know two men, one a Lamarckine, I'm not proud to say, who gouged out his eyes. The other was a Fanshawe. Then they came. Black dots on the ice floes, thousands of them. Waving banners so obscene they... Whatever. We were in no mood to fight. Driven mad by the light, driven to distraction by the lack of sleep, unnerved by the curious geometry of the place we were defending. We were easy meat. The forces of chaos slaughtered us and pushed us back into the city itself. The civilians, about 2 million strong, were worse than useless. They were pallid, idle things with no drive or appetite. When doom came upon them, they simply gave up. We were besieged for 5 months, despite 6 attempts by the Doom Eagles to break the deadlock. Faith, but they were terrifying. Giants, clashing their boulders together before each fight, screaming at the foe, killing 50 for every one we picked off. But it was like fighting the tide, and for all their power, there were only 60 of them. We called for reinforcements. Getus had promised us, but now he was long gone aboard his warship, drawn back behind the fleet picket in case things got nasty. The first man I saw fall to the torment was a captain in my 7th platoon. He just collapsed one day, feverish. We took him to the Pyridae Polar Infirmium, where Subjunctus Valis, the apothecary of the Doom Eagles Company, was running the show. An hour later, the captain was dead. His skin had blistered and bubbled. His eyes had burst. He had tried to kill Valis with a piece of the metal cot he had torn from the wall brace. Then he bled out. You know what that means? His entire body spewed blood from every orifice, every pore. He was a husk by the time it was over. In the day after the captain's death, 60 fell victim. Another day, 200. Another day, 1,000. Most died within 2 hours. Others lingered for days. Pustular, agonized. Men I had known all my life turned into grisly sacks of bone before my eyes. Damn you, Sark, for making me remember this! On the 7th day, it spread to the Fancho as well. On the 9th, it reached the civilian population. Valis ordered all measure of quarantine, but it was no good. He worked all hours of the endless day trying to find a vaccine, trying to alleviate the relentless infection. On the 10th day, a Doom Eagle fell victim. In his torment, blood gouting from his visor grills, he slew 2 of his comrades and 19 of my men. The disease had overcome even the Adeptus Astartes purity seals. I went to Valis, craving good news. He had set up a laboratory in the infirmium, where blood samples and tissue scrapes boiled in alembics and separated in oil flasks. He assured me the torment would be stopped. He explained how unlikely it was for a pestilence to be transmitted in such a cold clime, where there is no heat to incubate and spread decay. He also believed it would not flourish in light. So he had every stretch of the city wired with lamps, so there would be no darkness. No darkness. In a place where none came naturally, even the shadows of closed rooms were banished. Everything was bright. Perhaps you can see now why I abhor the light and cling to darkness. The stench of blood filth was appalling. Valis did his work, but still we fell. By the 21st day, I'd lost 30% of my force. The Fancho were all but gone. 12,000 Pyrodian citizens were dead or dying. 6 Doom Eagles had succumbed. Here are your facts if you want them. The plague persisted in a climate that should have killed it. It showed no common process of transmission. It brooked no attempt to contain or control it, despite efforts to enforce quarantine and cleanse infected areas with flamers. It was ferociously contagious. Even Space Marine purity seals were no protection. Its victims died in agony. Then, One of the Doom Eagles deciphered the obscene script of one of the Chaos banners displayed outside the walls. It said one word. One filthy word. One damned, abominable word that I have spent my life trying to forget.
5. I craned in at the dark doorway. What word? What word was it, Colonel? With great reluctance, he spoke it. It wasn't a word at all. It was an obscene gurgle, dignified by consonants. The glyph name of the plague demon itself. One of the 97 blasphemies that may not be written down. At its utterance, I fell back off my stool, nausea writhing in my belly and throat. Caliban shrieked, the sister collapsed in a faint, and the novitiate fled. Baptiste took 4 steps back from the doorway, turned, and vomited spectacularly. The temperature in the corridor dropped by 15 degrees. Unsteady, I attempted to straighten my overturned stool and pick up the artificer that the novitiate had knocked over. Where it had recorded the word, I saw the machine's parchment tape had begun to smoulder. Screaming and wailing echoed down the hall from various cells. And then Iok was out. Just next door, he had heard it all, his scarred head pressed to the cage bars. Now that cage door splintered off its mount and crashed to the corridor floor. Berserk, the huge ex-guardsman thrashed out and turned towards us. He was going to kill me, I'm certain, but I was slumped and my legs wouldn't work. Then Caliban, bless his brave heart, flew at him. My devoted servitor rose up on his stunted hind limbs, the bionics augmenting his vast forelimbs, throwing them up in a warning display. From splayed foot to reaching hand, Caliban was 11 feet tall. He peeled back his lips and screeched through bared steel canines. Froth dribbling from his tusked mouth, Iok smashed Caliban aside. My servitor made a considerable dent in the wall. Iok was on me. I swept my staff of office around and thumbed the recessed switch below the head. Electric crackles blasted from the staff's tip. Iok convulsed and fell. Twitching, he lay on the floorboards and evacuated involuntarily. Baptiste was on his feet now. Alarms were ringing, and novitiates were rushing frantically into the corridor with harness jackets and clench poles. I rose and looked back at the dark doorway. Colonel Ebo! The door slammed shut. 6. There would be no further interview that afternoon, Brother Baptiste made plain, despite my protests. Novitiates escorted me to a guest chamber on the 2nd floor. It was whitewashed and plain, with a hard wooden bed and small scriptorium table. A leaded window looked out onto the graveyard and the jungles beyond. I felt a great perturbation of spirit and paced the room as Caliban unpacked my belongings. I had come so close and had begun to draw the reluctant Ebo out. Now, to be denied the chance to continue when the truly dark secrets were being revealed. I paused by the window. The glaring crimson sun was sinking into the mauve oceans, throwing the thick jungles into black, wild relief. Seabirds reeled over the bay in the dying light. Stars were coming out in the dark blue edges of the sky. Calmer now, I reflected that whatever my internal uproar, the uproar in the place itself was greater. From the window I could hear all manner of screams, wails, shouts, banging doors, thundering footsteps, rattled keys. The word of blasphemy that Ebo had spoken had thrown all the fragile minds in this house of insanity into disarray, like red-hot metal plunged into quenching cold water. Great efforts were being made to quieten the inmates. I sat at the teak scriptorium for a while, reviewing the transcripts, while Caliban dozed on a settle by the door. Ebo had made particular mention of Subjunctus Valus, the Doom Eagle's apothecary. I looked over copies of the old Pyridae debriefings I had brought with me, but Valus's name only appeared in the muster listings. Had he survived? Only a direct request to the Doom Eagle's chapter house could provide an answer, and that might take months. The Adeptus Astartes are notoriously secretive, sometimes downright blatant in their uncooperative relationship with the Administratum. At best, it might involve a series of formal approaches, delaying tactics, bargaining. Even so, I wanted to alert my brethren on Lorches to the possible lead. I damned Saint Bastian when I remembered the place had no vox caster. I couldn't even forward a message to the astropathic enclave at Symbolopolis for transmission off-world. A sister brought me supper on a tray. Just as I was finishing, and Caliban was lighting the lamps, Nero and Jardone came to my chamber. "Brothers?" Jardone got right to it, staring at me through his half-moon lenses. "The Brotherhood of the Hospice have met, and they decided that you must leave tomorrow. No further audiences will be granted. We have a vessel that will take you to the fishing port at Math Island. You can obtain passage to Symbolopolis from there." "I am disappointed, Jardone. I do not wish to leave. My recollection is not complete." "It is as complete as it's going to be," he snapped.
"The hospice has never been so troubled,"
Nero said quietly.
"There have been brawls. 2 novitiates have been injured. 3 inmates have attempted suicide. Years of work have been undone in a few moments."
I nodded. "I regret the disturbance, but—"
"No buts," barked Jardone.
"I'm sorry, Hyasark,"
said Nero.
"That is how it is."
I slept badly in the cramped cot. My mind, my memory, played games, going over the details of the interview. There was shock and injury in Ebo, that was certain, for the event had been traumatic. But there was something else, a secret beyond anything he had told me, some profound memory. I could taste it. I would not be deterred. Too many lives depended on it. Caliban was slumbering heavily when I crept from the chamber. In the darkness, I felt my way to the stairs and up to the third floor. There was a restlessness in the close air. I moved past locked cells where men moaned in their sleep or muttered in their insomnia. At intervals, I hugged the shadows as novitiate wardens with lamps made their patrol. It took perhaps 3/4 of an hour to reach the cell block where Ebo resided. I stalked nervously past the bolted door of Iok's room. The spy slit opened at my touch. "Ebo." "Colonel Ebo," I called softly into the darkness.
"Who?"
His cold voice replied. "It is Sark. We weren't finished."
"Go away."
"I will not, until you tell me the rest."
"Go away,"
I thought desperately. An eagerness made me cruel. "I have a torch, Ebo. A powerful lamp. Do you want me to shine it in through the spy hole?" When he spoke again, there was terror in his voice. "Emperor, forgive me for my manipulation."
"What more is there?"
he asked.
"The torment spread. We died by the thousand. I cannot help your cause, though I pity those men on Genovingia."
"You never told me how it ended."
"Did you not read the reports?"
I glanced up and down the dark cell block to make sure we were still alone. "I read them. They were sparse. They said Warmaster Getus incinerated the enemy from orbit, and ships were sent to relieve you at Piridipola. They expressed horror at the extent of the plague loss. 59,000 men dead. No count was made of the civilian losses. They said that by the time the relief ships arrived, the torment had been expunged. 400 men were evacuated. Of them, only 191 are still alive, according to the records."
"There's your answer, then."
"No, Colonel. That's no answer. How was it expunged?"
"We located the source of infection. Cleansed it. That was how."
"How, Ebo? How in the God Emperor's name?"
"It was the height of the torment. Thousands dead."
7.
"It was the height of the torment. Thousands dead. Corpses everywhere. Pus and blood running in those damnably bright halls. I went to Valis again, begging for news. He was in his infirmium, working hard. Another batch of vaccines to try, he told me. The last 6 had failed, and had even seemed to aggravate the contagion. The men were fighting themselves by then, killing each other in fear and loathing. I told Valis this, and he was silent, working at a flame burner on the steel workbench. He was a huge being, of course. Adeptus Astartes, a head and a half taller than me, wearing a cowled red robe over his Doom Eagle's armor. He lifted specimen bottles from his Narthesium and held them up to the ever-present light. I was tired. Tired like you wouldn't believe. I hadn't slept in days. I put down the flamer I had been using for cleansing work and sat on a stool. "Are we all going to perish?" I asked the great apothecary. "Dear, valiant Ebbo," he said with a laugh. "You poor little man. Of course not. I will not allow it." He turned to face me, filling a long syringe from a stoppered bottle. I was in awe of him, even after the time we had spent together. "You are one of the lucky ones, Ebbo. Clean so far. I'd hate to see you contract this pestilence. You have been a faithful ally to me through this dark time, helping to distribute my vaccines. I will mention you to your commanders." "Thank you, apothecary." "Ebbo," he said, "I think it is fair to say we cannot save any who have been infected now. We can only hope to vaccinate the healthy against infection. I have prepared a serum for that purpose, and I will inoculate all healthy men with it. You will help me, and you will be first, so I can be sure not to lose you." I hesitated. He came forwards with the syringe, and I started to pull up my sleeve. "Open your jacket and tunic. It must go through the stomach wall." I reached for my tunic clasps and saw it. The tiniest thing. Just a tiny, tiny thing. A greenish-yellow blister just below Valis's right ear.
8. Ebbo fell silent. The air seemed electrically charged. Inmates in neighbouring cells were thrashing, restless, and some were crying out. At any moment, the novitiate wardens would come. "Ebbo," I called through the slit. His voice had fallen to a terrified whisper, the whisper of a man who simply cannot bear to put the things haunting his mind into words. "Ebbo!" Keys clattered nearby. Lamplight flickered under a hall door. Iok was banging at his cell door and growling. Someone was crying. Someone else was wailing in a made-up language. The air was ripe with the smell of feces, sweat, and agitated fear. "Ebbo!" There was no time left. "Ebbo, please!"
"Valis had the torment. He'd had it all along, right from the start."
Ebbo's voice was strident and anguished. The words came out of the slit as hard and lethal as lasfire.
"He had spread it. He, through his work, his vaccines, his treatments, he had spread the plague. His mind had been corrupted by it. He didn't know what he was doing. His many, many vaccines had failed because they weren't vaccines. They were new strains of the torment bred in his infirmium. He was the carrier, a malevolent, hungry pestilence clothed in the form of a nobleman, killing thousands upon thousands upon thousands."
I went cold, colder than I'd ever been before. The idea was monstrous. The torment had been more than a waster of lives. It had been sentient, alive, deliberate, planning and moving through the instrument it had corrupted. The door of Iok's cell was bulging and shattering. Screams welled all around, panic and fear in equal measure. The entire hospice was shaking with unleashed psychoses. Lamps flashed at the end of the block. Novitiates yelled out and ran forward as they saw me. They would have reached me had not Iok broken out again, rabid and slavering, throwing his hideous bulk into them, ripping at them in the frenzy. "Ebbo!" I yelled through the slit. "What did you do?" He was crying, his voice ragged with gut-heaving sobs.
"I grabbed my flamer. Emperor, have mercy. I snatched it up, bathed Valis with flame. I killed him. I killed him. I slew the pride of the Doom Eagles. I burned him apart. I expunged the source of the torment."
A novitiate flew past me, his throat ripped out by animal tusks. His colleagues were locked in a desperate struggle with Iok. "You burned him?"
"Yes. The flames touched off the chemicals in the infirmium, the sample bottles, the flasks of seething plague water. They exploded. A fireball
Oh, gods! Brighter than the daylight that had never gone away. Brighter than... fire everywhere. Liquid fire. Flames around me. All around. Oh! Oh!
Bright flashes filled the hall, the loud discharge of a las weapon. I stepped back from Ebbo's cell door, shaking. Iok lay dead amid the mangled corpses of three novitiates. Several others, wounded, whimpered on the floor. Brother Jardone, a las pistol in his bony hand, pushed through the orderlies and ecclesiarchs gathering in the hall and pointed the weapon at me.
"I should kill you for this, Sark! How dare you!"
Baptrice stepped forwards and took the gun from Jardone. Nero gazed at me in weary disappointment.
"See to Ebbo," Baptrice told the sisters nearby.
They unlocked the cell door and went in.
"You will leave tomorrow, Sark," Baptrice said. "I will file a complaint to your superiors."
"Do so," I said. "I never wanted this, but I had to reach the truth. It may be, from what Ebbo has told me, that a way to fight Ulrin's pox is in our reach."
"I hope so,"
said Baptrice, gazing bitterly at the carnage in the hall.
"It has cost enough."
The novitiates were escorting me back to my room when the sisters brought Ebbo out. The ordeal of recollection had killed him. I will never forgive myself for that, no matter how many lives on Genovingia we saved. And I will never forget the sight of him, revealed at last in the light. 9. I left the next day by launch with Caliban. No one from the hospice saw me off or even spoke to me. From Math Island, I transmitted my report to Symbolopolis, and from there, astropathically, it lanced through the warp to Lorches. Was Ulrin's pox expunged? Yes, eventually. My work assisted in that. The blood froth was like the torment, engineered by the arch-enemy, just as sentient. 52 medical officers, sources just like Valis, were executed and incinerated. I forget how many we lost altogether in the Genovingia group. I forget a lot these days. My memory is not what it was, and I am thankful for that, at times. I never forgot Ebbo. I never forgot his corpse, wheeled out by the sisters. He had been caught in the infirmium flames on Pyridipola. Limbless, wizened like a seed case, he hung in a suspensor chair, kept alive by intravenous drains and sterile sprays. A ragged, revolting remnant of a man. He had no eyes. I remember that most clearly of all. The flames had scorched them out. He had no eyes, and yet he was terrified of the light. I still believe that memory is the finest faculty we as a species own. But, by the Golden Throne, there are things I wish I could never remember again. That was Pestilence, written by Dan Abnett, read by Toby Longworth.